Hello and welcome to this Canadian Opera Company podcast sponsored by DECA, the opera label. My name is Jana Wichlow and I'm joined today by my podcast co-presenter Gianmarco Segato.
Hello. If you're listening to this podcast, and we assume you are, we assume we're speaking to somebody out there, you'll have discovered the COC's latest online venture, which is COC Radio, the hub of all multimedia related to and created by the company. If you go to our homepage, coc.ca, you'll see a link at the top right of the top menu, and from there you can listen specifically for Rigoletto to a listening guide. You can watch our stage director, Christopher Alden, discussing the opera, and also watch a video showing costume development. And the costumes are beautiful, as we'll get into. There's lots to explore, so we hope you'll have fun looking at the videos and podcasts we have for you. And there's lots more to come. Also on the COC's award-winning website, you'll find Alexander Neef's blog, which gives you a fascinating insight into the life of our general director. And you can also check out Parlando, which is a very busy blog full of up-to-date news on everything COC, including behind-the-scenes goings-on and interviews. And you can follow us on the inevitable Twitter, and you can like us on Facebook. We hope you like us, that you really like us, for breaking news, special offers, contests, and much more. And all this can be found through the great hub, which is coc.ca.
Well, you were just listening to the opening bars of Verdi's Rigoletto at the top of our podcast. The recording we're listening to today is from Deutsche Grammophon. It was recorded in 1980. With Carlo Maria Giulini conducting the Vienna Philharmonic and the Vienna State Opera Chorus. Piero Cappuccilli is Rigoletto, Eliana Kotrubash is Gilda, and Placido Domingo is the Duke. Rigoletto is the second opera in our fall 2011 season. It runs for 12 performances from September 29th to October 22nd at the Four Seasons Centre for the Performing Arts in Toronto. You might also hear some ambient noise with tucked away as we usually are in a warm-up room here at the COC, and yeah, there's some singing going on around us.
I think it sounds like a Rigoletto voice to me.
It does. Rigoletto is one of the most performed operas of all time. I think it ranks something like number 23 on the rate of the number of times it gets performed. And it was a hit since its premiere in 1851 at the Teatro La Fenice in Venice. But it nearly never happened. Verdi was looking for new material for an opera, and he was very, very keen on Victor Hugo's play Le Roi s'amuse, which I suppose means the king entertains himself.
Right. Think of it what you will.
Yes. The play told the story of the immoral King Francis I of France, his buffoon, or jester, Triboulet, and his relationship with Triboulet's daughter, Blanche. Now, the play was post-French Revolution and post-Napoleon, and it served for Hugo as a platform for exposing social injustices and the decadence of monarchy. Mm. So when the play premiered in 1832, it caused a scandal. It set off a riot and closed after one performance.
Wow.
But Verdi was still very taken with it, claiming, in quotes, it was the greatest subject and perhaps the greatest drama of all modern times.
Yeah, I think I get the impression that at the time Hugo, I mean, he's still considered a great author, but he was very much considered on the same level by Verdi anyway as Shakespeare. Verdi had the complete works of Shakespeare and Hugo on his bookshelf,
yes,
and you can still see them in his home.
His house. But in 1850, the Austrian army had reoccupied Venice after the city had enjoyed 15 years of independence. The Austrians were sensitive about subversive attacks on ruling classes and had enforced strict censorship of the arts. Italian patriotism was especially touchy for them, one of Verdi's favorite topics. Mm-hmm. And Verdi was informed that the censors were forbidding him to produce his opera. Now, here's the things they didn't like about it. The authority figure of the Duke, the sort of the ruling noble, is portrayed as evil, and, horrors, he survives at the end of the opera.
So
he's a villain who survives as well.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't get his due comeuppance. The second point was Gilda's passive suicide is not treated as a sin in the opera, but is romanticized, and as she lays dying, no priest is present to perform the last rites. And thirdly, Rigoletto's declamation to the nobles in the story, when he curses them saying, "Your mothers gave themselves to their lackeys, you are all bastards."
Mm-hmm.
These were pretty inflammatory words.
I think that the last quote you said was probably part of the original libretto, and I'm pretty sure that's one of the things that got mm-hmm. excised by the censors. And apparently, as time went on, I mean, Rigoletto was a huge success despite all this, but it continued to experience problems with the censors in the various city-states within Italy, and I think they were always having to tweak it and change it and change, you know, the type of monarch who was portrayed.
Mm-hmm. But they did get to actually perform it, and its premiere in 1851 was a huge success, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. it has never been out of extreme popularity since then.
No. In this podcast, we're not going to go in great detail about the plot. You can listen to that on another online podcasts. For now, let's hear some more music. We'll be listening to Gilda's famous aria, Caro Nome, certainly one of the most famous arias of all times, used in many a commercial, I think. She's an innocent young woman, fresh from years in a convent, and she's only been allowed to leave the house with her nurse, Giovanna, to attend Mass. There, she has met a mysterious, handsome young man who has been gazing at her in the church, and he's managed to speak with her and has followed her home. She's smitten with this poor student, Gualtier Maldet, but we know that in fact the student is actually the Duke in disguise, and that she is just the latest in a long line of meaningless conquests. So here she sings her ravishing aria, full of the wonder and joy of first love. And it's very interesting because it's an aria, but it also exhibits how Verdi, even at this point in his career, was trying to break free of some of these strictures, I guess you can call them, the aria format, the duet format, because you'll hear, even before the aria is over, the courtiers sneaking in and sort of whispering in the background they're about to kidnap her.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll listen to the aria now, sung by Iliana Kotrubaš.
Thank you.
as you were saying before the aria, at the end of it, as Gilda's melting away on wings of love, you hear the voices of the courtiers as they come in, and it's a very menacing sort of feeling. They're approaching and they're going to kidnap the unsuspecting young woman. You heard Walter Gulino as Borsa, Dirk Sagemüller as Ceprano, and Luigi Decorato as Marullo with the Vienna State Opera Chorus.
And as you mentioned, the character Borsa, just because our listeners know who our Borsa is, they may have listened to a podcast series we did, I think, 2 years ago, maybe.
Yes, interviews 2 years ago.
With John Kreider, who's singing that role, and he's a longstanding member of the company.
That's right. We have 12 performances of Rigoletto this fall. And so what we've done, we have two artists for each of the main roles. Our two Gildas, the first is the Russian soprano Ekaterina Sadovnikova. She's making her debut with the COC. And she sung Gilda with the Royal Opera House Covent Garden and Teatro La Fenice, where, you know, 150 years ago, Rigoletto was premiered.
Wow.
Actually, that's her 160th birthday, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And Canadian Simone Osborne is our other Gilda. She's a member of the COC's Ensemble Studio, and she's on a wonderful career ascendant, and this is her role debut.
Yes, and she, listeners might remember her from last season's Magic Flute, because she was one of our Paminas as
That's
well.
That's right. The COC's new production is directed by Christopher Alden, based on his production from Chicago, from Lyric Opera of Chicago, from 2000. And he's helmed our Flying Dutchman, and is one of the world's most acclaimed and busy opera directors. I'm a little biased, I'm a big fan, because the COC's Flying Dutchman is still my favorite production of anything we've done here. And the designer is Michael Levine, a highly talented Canadian designer who works all over the world, most recently designed for us our Ring Cycle and directed the first part of that, Das Rheingold. Our music director, Johannes de Boos, leads the cast and the COC Orchestra and Chorus. The chorus is obviously under chorus master Sandra Horst. The expression dream team is thrown around a lot these days. It's a little overused, I think, but I think in this instance, it really works. You have with Christopher Alden and Michael Levine two talents who always exceed what you expect. They don't do what I expect anyway. They consistently produce another angle, another way of looking at a story, but they serve the story really well. They examine what is at the heart of the story, and when they present it, I feel my little brain being stretched. I really do. They illuminate things, they illuminate details and essentials that I just haven't seen before. And what I love about it is that after a performance where either of these two men are involved, I don't just want to sit down for a drink afterwards and discuss it for an hour. I will think about it for weeks.
It stays with you.
And maybe years, yes.
This reminds me that Christopher Alden, if people want to know a bit more about the production and some of his ideas, there's an article in Parlando. No, in... What's our newsletter called?
Prelude.
In Prelude.
The one that you wrote.
Right, the one I wrote. I know it's a shameless self-plug, but no, I mean,
it's
this is relevant. This is relevant because one of the things that Christopher Alden talked about in leading up to this production is how he wanted to get back at the feeling of how the audiences felt when they first saw Rigoletto. As we've alluded to already, it was a disturbing subject, and the censors were involved. I mean, it was a hot sort of thing, and hot potato is a good way of putting it. And I think over time, you know, the stories maybe don't have the same meaning for contemporary audiences because that was 150 years ago. You know, people were different then. And what Christopher Alden is trying to do is to bring back some of the frisson, perhaps, that original audiences would have experienced.
I was raised with Rigoletto being a pretty sugary story.
Right.
It was all about the father-daughter, and it was all sort of sweet and sad.
And there is that. But...
but in the way we're seeing it here, and the way the opera works so well for me, is what happens to innocent people when power runs amok.
So it's with great excitement that we open this new production, which is set brilliantly in the world of a 19th century gentleman's club or gaming room, except as we've been talking about just now, these are no true gentlemen. As depicted so powerfully in Verdi's music and Piave's words, the Duke's power over his courtiers and their despicable behavior to each other, and as we'll see in this production, especially to their women, is stunningly brought to life. The sets and costumes are lavish, but under the beauty and the lusciousness is a very real and disturbing power struggle. Rigoletto himself lambastes the courtiers in a famous baritone aria, which we'll get to shortly. Verdi hailed Hugo's character of the jester in his play, claiming, "Triboulet is a creation worthy of Shakespeare." And he is a fascinating character. He's got deeply drawn flaws and a need and capacity for love, which cannot save him ultimately. As Rigoletto, the hunchback comic relief in the Duke's court, he is privy to a world of male power that is run amok. It's up to the audience to decide why Rigoletto is the harsh, mocking character he appears to be in the Duke's court. And we wonder, is it his physical deformity, the loss of his beloved wife, the need to survive in a cruel world, or is it all of the above? And it's a huge, challenging role for baritone. I mean, anytime you read an interview with an up-and-coming baritone or established baritone, they almost always use Rigoletto as the benchmark of what they're aspiring to. It's considered something that, you know, you it takes years and years of work to be able to just to achieve technically as a singer beyond the dramatic challenges. One of the great past interpreters of the role was the legendary Canadian Louis Quillico, who really made the role his own
and sang it at the COC.
Yeah, sang at the COC many times. We're very lucky this fall to have two powerful singing actors really bringing Rigoletto to life. Hawaiian baritone Quinn Kalsey is making his COC debut, and it's not a moment too soon. He's definitely one of these more than up-and-comers, I'd say. He has sung or will be singing shortly at the San Francisco Opera, Vancouver Opera, in Berlin, in Zurich, Frankfurt, at the English National Opera, Lyric Opera of Chicago, and the Met. And alternating the role with him is American baritone Lester Lynch, who has sung with the COC before. Audiences might remember him in our production of Billy Budd a few seasons back. He is the other Rigoletto. He's also a very busy baritone with recent appearances, including Scarpia at Glimmerglass, Gerard and Andrea Chenier at the Bregenz Festival, and other roles at Los Angeles Opera and Washington National Opera. So let's hear Rigoletto's heartrending aria now, Cortigiani vil razza dannata, you courtiers, vile, accursed race. Powerful words as Rigoletto curses Gilda's kidnappers and then, in a desperate turn, begs them to return his daughter to him. We'll hear Piero Cappuccilli.
Oh,
I don't know if you ever saw this episode of Frasier, Gianmarco, but there was there's actually, I told this another story about Frasier and Rigoletto before, but this is another one.
No.
Frasier, as people who are fans of the sitcom may remember, was a big opera fan. And one Valentine's Day, he wants to go to the opera, but he doesn't have a date, and he takes his father. The reason he takes his father, he doesn't want to take a woman, because there's a woman at the opera who attends, who he wants to try and meet. So his father is very scornful of the opera, and as soon as he reads the synopsis of Rigoletto, because that's what they're seeing, he just ridicules it. He says it's so stupid, the hunchback jester supposedly dating his own daughter. He said, I mean, this is just ridiculous. But of course, by the end of the episode, what's happened is that in an attempt to help his son win this woman, he's now pretending to be his own other son's gay boyfriend.
Oh, God.
There's this complete, you know, faking of who he is.
That's an operatic plot in itself.
It becomes an operatic plot. And then, of course, at the end of the episode, you realize that, at least in Frasier's world, life is as ridiculous as some opera plots are claimed to be. But it's a really funny episode with Canada's Brian Bedford, actually, in a guest role. Well, in the COC's production of Rigoletto, we have two dashing and dastardly dukes. The Greek-American tenor Dimitri Pitas is making his COC debut, and he has such roles under his belt as Alfredo, Edgardo, and Tamino, which he sung at the Met, and he'll be appearing later this season again at the Met as Rodolfo. Mexican tenor David Lomeli also makes his debut with the COC, and later this season he debuts with Houston Grand Opera, Deutsche Oper Berlin as Alfredo, and at Glyndebourne as Rodolfo. He recently performed at New York City Opera and at Santa Fe. The character of the Duke is charming and lethal. He's the romantic interest and the villain, and he gets to live at the end after all that he's done. In fact, it's the repetition of phrases at the end of the opera from his aria, you hear them off stage, of his aria La Donna Immobile that alerts Rigoletto to the fact that the Duke isn't dead. And if the Duke isn't dead, whose body is in the sack? Now, if you're not following this, it's because we're not telling you the whole story right now, but as we said, you can listen to the synopsis in another podcast that is online. This aria is probably the most recognizable in the opera. It's the Duke's sexist perspective on woman's unpredictable nature. We'll hear it now in its entirety, sung by Plácido Domingo as the Duke.
Menzognero, ma pensier. Peri pensier.
Verdi had predicted that the aria was going to be a big hummable hit and kept the piece under wraps until dress rehearsal, apparently to avoid it being leaked early. But you were saying that days of the premiere...
Well, apparently, I'm not sure if it was like before or after, soon after, though, that the old men with their hurdy-gurdies on the streets of Venice, I suppose, were playing this tune. So it really was like, the top 40 hits of its day, one of them anyway.
And now it's a cell phone ringtone.
Right, there you go.
There you go.
Through a long career, when he wrote some of the world's most popular operas, Verdi was also challenging operatic conventions. And you see it in the evolution of his own works from the early forms of the recitative interspersed with bravura show-stopping arias and ensembles, through to the more through-composed later works, where the drama drove the action more naturally. Humanity is a driving force in Verdi, including the theme of parent-child and especially the father-daughter bond, which reoccurs in so many of Verdi's operas. I'm thinking back to just a couple of seasons ago with Simone Boccanegra, which mm-hmm. has a famous duet for the father-daughter. It meant so much to Verdi, that bond. We see it very evidently in Rigoletto, the way the jester's rough edges are gentled when he is with his daughter, and his desire to protect her at all costs, and then the horrible anguish he experiences when he loses her. We can ponder the loss that Verdi sustained as a young man when his first wife and both his small children died within 2 years of each other. It seems to really have had an effect on Verdi, and I can't help but think that the way he focused on that relationship was mm-hmm. somehow inspired by these tragedies.
That's right.
As the final excerpt in this podcast, we'll listen to the duet between Rigoletto and Gilda as the father holds his dying daughter in his arms, and at the end, cries out in anguish in the realization that Monteroni's curse has been fulfilled. We'll hear Ileana Kotrubash and Piero Cappuccilli.
Thank you.
Just a taste of Verdi's magnificent heartbreaker, Rigoletto. You can hear and read more about the opera online at coc.ca, where you can also purchase tickets and the recording we've been listening to. We'd love to hear from you. Check out our podcast updates on the COC's Facebook page and let us know what you think of COC Radio or our podcasts and ask us questions. This is Jana Wichler with Gianmarco Segato. Please join us.